Okay.
Yeah, no kidding. Hey, good evening, everybody. Thanks for coming. Thanks to the Inkers for having, even though this is usually a regular Thursday night shiur, but we sort of expanded the shiur tonight. Rev Daniel was busy, so we decided to take over the shiur and use it for a little bit of learning about Yom HaTzmaut. Just wanted to just begin by saying that even though Yom HaShoah is actually this coming Sunday, if you're in Chutz Laaretz and here in Israel, Sunday night and Monday, but I think that Yom HaTzmaut and Yom HaShoah are very strongly connected. I'm not sure exactly why they're connected, and I don't know if anybody knows why they're connected, but I think just the fact that two of the most, I guess, significant, arguably significant events in Jewish history in the last 2,000 years or so, at least the last 1,500 years, the fact that both of them took place within 3 years of each other, 3 to 5 years of each other. The Holocaust, one of the greatest tragedies, both in numbers and also in terms of the type of tragedy that have befallen the Jewish people over in the past, their whole time in Golis, basically, since the Second Temple. And Yom HaTzmaut, the establishment of a Jewish state in Israel for the first time in 2,000 years, is, both of them are really incredible events. The fact that they're within 3 years of each other really begs for some sort of explanation, which we don't totally have. But I think the point that we can get out of them is that both of them are clearly not by happenstance, meaning both of them are not b'mikra. Both events are clearly the Yad Hashem. Again, we don't always understand why. There's a number of philosophical explanations, which we won't go into now, at some other point, about why both of them have happened and what the connection might be. But just the fact that both of them force us through Jewish history to stop and think about, what is happening and what the message is supposed to be and what we're supposed to learn from this, and the feelings of sadness and mourning on one hand, and the feelings of joy and thankfulness to HaKadosh Baruch Hu on the other one, and really both together of always saying that anything that Hashem does is for the best, even if we totally have no idea of why that would be, I think are very, very important messages to keep in mind during this time period. As I mentioned on the group, so there's a number of list of things that we're having these dedicating these shiurim for. First, number one, David and his family. Just they should all have a refuah shleima. And the fact that David is here tonight and giving a shiur is just unbelievable. I'm in awe. And all of you should have a total refuah shleima for us. And for us, aguf. My wife's father, Mr. Baron Bernard Baron, Ben Sion Baruch Ben Eliezer Menachem Mendel Akoyin. His yard site is Saturday night and Sunday. Amy's father. Amy's mother, sorry, I wrote down, I have the name on my email, but unfortunately I don't remember, and Josh is not here. I think it's Gabriella Bas something Lieb, but unfortunately I forgot the full thing. Hopefully when Josh comes, he'll give us the whole name. In addition to that, so David's mother also, the first Saturday night is Moshe Shabbos and Sunday. Again, this one I actually might remember is Sima Shandel Bas, Shandel Sima Bas Ephraim Halevi. Okay, so also, so the Shurim should be dedicated for you and your family, and for Lili Nishmas, everybody else. And same idea for things that happen. We never know. Tragedy strikes. We don't always know why it happens, but we do our best to try to keep going and learn what we can from it. And Bezer Hashem, we should all be able to grow and hopefully take these events and use them as an opportunity to get closer to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. David, it's all you.
First of all, I'm very, very happy that the shiur is for the refuah shleima of my family and not in memory of my family, which is basically what it should have been. We were saved by a miracle and a number of small quote-unquote coincidences that had they not happened, I wouldn't be here now. And just want to mention I'm very, very grateful for that, that it's for our refuah shleima and not for anything else. I also want to say that the shiur I'm about to give, it's not my thought, it's not my words. Hashem did not make me a Talmid Chacham, but He did make me a very good parrot, so I'm able to take other people's words and translate them and rewrite them and put them on paper. So this is something I'd found actually several years ago in the Parshat Shavua Bar Ilan papers that are given out. I'm sorry, I don't remember who actually wrote it, but I thought it was absolutely fascinating, and years and years ago already I translated it to English and written it down just for myself. And I just thought that was something I would share with you tonight. The Vilna from Vilna, as we all know, he believed in actively encouraging the Gula process. And we all know that he encouraged his students to come to Israel. Supposedly, he also revealed to his students before they came the Talichea Gula, the steps of the Gula, and even the dates of things as they would happen. And he was also a firm believer, and he passed this on to his students, that Eretz Yisrael nikna b'Yisurim, that we acquire the land of Israel through troubles and tribulations and trials and all other words that start with TR. And it's not an easy thing to move to or live in Eretz Yisrael. And only students of the Gra. Nobody else would be able to handle the trials and tribulations, the Yisurim, except for the students of the Gra, because of the power that they were infused with by their Rebbe, could have survived the Yisurim that they went through. Particularly those first 30 years, which is about 1810 to 1840. The Gra students were told that very, very important events would take place on the 20th day of Sfirat HaOmer, which he had quoted. He had said that the 20th day of Sfirat HaOmer is Evan Pinali Yesod Gula. It's the cornerstone for the foundation of the redemption. Whatever that means in Gra's language, it's a good thing. He said also on the 20th day of the Sfirah, he says, Ein a klipa sholetet. I'm not a full understander of Kabbalistic concepts, but the klipa is, you know, you have a fruit, you have the fruit that you want to eat, you have the klipa that's on the outside, the thing you throw away. The klipa is representing something that's not so good. And he said on the 20th day of the Sfirah, on other days we don't have this rule, but on the 20th day of Sfirah, Ein a klipa sholetet. The klipa, the bad things, is Kabbalistic sense of what's not so nice, doesn't have the power that it normally does. And that is why on that day, that was the day that they decided to lay the cornerstone for the Beit Midrash Eliyahu after they'd already made Aliyah to Israel, and they opened the Beit Midrash Eliyahu, a Beit Midrash in the Gra's name. They opened it specifically during Sfirat HaOmer, having a party in a tekes on this particular day, because of the things the Gra believed about the 20th day of the Sfira. The Kol HaTor, which is a book that was written by one of the Gra's main Talmidim, Rav Hillel Rivlin of Shaklov, who lived from 1758 to 1838. The Rivlins, by the way, whoever doesn't know, are one of the most famous families in Israel. I think their descendants number about 50,000 right now. They originally came from this Gerusha Sfarad, the Spanish Inquisition. They're mentioned under the name Rivlin, I think, first time in the 1670s. And their descendants went on to be tremendous rabbis. The current, is he still Speaker of the Knesset, Ruby Rivlin? I'm not sure, but he's still a member of Knesset. He's a descendant, Sefi Rivlin, who was a famous actor, who children know the Bayit Shel Fistuk. He's a descendant of the Rivlins. Professors, doctors, authors, lawyers, actors, they're all from this famous Rivlin family. And I found out today that there's even a rivlinfamily.com website that you can look up all these different members of the Rivlin family. David Yellen came from the Rivlin family, and a lot of other famous people. Anyway, that the Rav Hillel Rivlin of Shaklov, he was the main Talmid of the Gra, and he's the one who led the students of the Gra to move to Eretz Yisrael. And I believe that was in 1806. And he said, he wrote in his book Kol HaTor. Kol HaTor is a book written by Rav Hillel Rivlin, which describes the, I believe it's the 999 footsteps of the Geula or of the Mashiach. I don't fully remember, but it's a Kabbalistic book about how to get to the Geula. And he writes in that book, on the day in 5572, which would be 1811, 1812, when they laid the cornerstone, he says, this is what he says happened in the spiritual world. The first window of the iron wall was open, which was closed since the time that the Beit HaMikdash was destroyed. When they moved to Israel and they opened on the 20th day of Sfira this Beit Midrash in the name of the Vilna Gaon, that was the opening of a window that had been closed since the time Beit HaMikdash was destroyed. He speaks of the relationship between Yesod and Tiferet. And if you happen to look at the Siddur and you say that the long Sfirat HaOmer, Yesod and Tiferet are the two Ma'alot that we mention on the 20th day of the Sfira. He speaks of the relationship between Yesod and Tiferet, which comes to fruition on that day through Malchut. And his great-great-great-grandson, maybe, who was Rav Shlomo Zalman Rivlin. Rav Shlomo Zalman Rivlin wrote the Midrash Shlomo, in addition to other books. He was very recent. He was born 1915. He died 1994. He received smicha from Rav Charlap and Rav Uziel. He was more known for his music. He was known to be a famous chazan, and he has a book called Zmirat Shmuel and Shirat Shmuel. But he also has a sefer called Mirat Shmuel, which is a commentary of his on the Gra himself and the Gra's opinions and ideas on certain things. And in Midrash, In Midrash Shlomo, by Shlomo Zalman Rivlin, he says that the Sfira are special days which have give us a potential to lalot b'kedusha. These are days in which we can change ourselves, change the world, and actually create kedusha, or increase the kedusha. But he says that there's an opposite problem. Once you have the potential to create more kedusha, you have more of a potential for dveikut klipot, for those klipot, those not so nice spiritual Kabbalistic things, to get stuck to us as well. And he says that's why during Sfirat Omer, it's very, very important for us to try and stay away from evil, to stay away from danger, and to stay away from anything bad during those days. But he says, except for 2 days, that the klipa has no power. And he mentions the 20th day of Sfirah, which we had mentioned already, and he also mentions the 42nd day of the Omer. For those who haven't realized yet, the 20th day of the Omer is Yom Atzmut, but the 42nd day of the Omer is not Yom Yerushalayim. Yom Yerushalayim happens to be the 43rd day of the Omer. But most of the work was done, certainly the preparatory work, and most of the fighting was done the day before Yerushalayim was liberated. Yerushalayim was liberated on the 43rd day of the Omer, and that's why it became Yom Yerushalayim. But really, the work of liberating Yerushalayim happened the day before on the 42nd day of the Omer. And Abba Ibn actually said about on that day, which was June 6th, the 42nd day of the of Sfirat Omer, he said, this is the day that Israel has passed from serious danger to successful resistance. So really, although we celebrate Yom Yerushalayim on the 43rd day of the Omer, perhaps maybe it's the 42nd day of the Omer that really where the secret of Yom Yerushalayim lies. There's another sefer called Musad HaYesod, which is also a book by another Rivlin. I'm not sure, again, there's a whole lot of Rivlins, just like 50,000 today, and I'm not joking. That's what it says in their website. But Masod Yisod talks about Nachalat Shiva. Nachalat Shiva, for those of you who don't know, when you come down Ben Yehudi, you go to Kikar Tzion, and then you have this road that goes up with all the restaurants on it, and right next to it is a road that's actually called Rivlin Street. Nachalat Shiva, he writes, it was the first neighborhood that was outside the walls, which had its cornerstone ceremony on purpose on the 20th day of the Omer, on what would eventually be Yom Atzmut in 1869, I believe it was. Another Rivlin, Rav Shmuel Rivlin, as I say, for Or Shmuel, he's the grandson of the Midrash Shlomo that we discussed before. He expands a little bit on Kol HaTor, which is the original book that was written by Rav Hillel Rivlin, who was the student of the Gra. I'm sorry, there's a lot of Rivlins. But again, they kept this relationship with their Rebbe, with the Gra, throughout all the generations. Anyway, in his book Or Shmuel, he talks about he says there are 156 ma'alot ha-gula, 156 steps or levels to the gula. And he says Male number 17, he says, is actually a pasuk from Sefer Ovadia. In Sefer Ovadia, there's a pasuk. Vaya Beit Yaakov Esh, the house of Jacob will be like fire. U Beit Yosef Lava, and the house of Yosef will be like a flame. U Beit Esav Lakash, and the house of Esav will be like straw. But the Kubahem Vachlum, and Yaakov and Yosef will light up Esav and will destroy them. And there won't be anything left of the house of Esav because Hashem has spoken. He says that's Male number 17 in the Gula. He explains that Yaakov can only beat Esav and his angel when Yosef is near him and protecting his mother. He talks about protecting his mother as well. When Yosef and Rachel are near him, and that there's some type of protection, some type of relationship between them and Yaakov, that's the only time he's able to defeat Esav and his angel. Now, what's interesting is Yaakov, of the seven Sfirot, Yaakov represents Tiferet. Tiferet is actually a combination of Chesed and Gvura. Chesed is represented by Avraham. Gvura is represented by Yitzchak. So you in Tiferet, in Yaakov, you actually have three of the Sfirot represented. Yosef is represented by Yesod, and Yesod includes Netzach, Hod, and Malchut. The other, that's four. So we had three from Yaakov, we had three of the Sfirot, and Yosef, we have four of the Sfirot together. And on the 20th of Omer, we say Yesod should be Tiferet. Yosef and Yaakov. Basically, we're combining all the avot in here. We're combining all the sfirot. It's where all the powers, all the greatest Kabbalistic powers, come together. The Kol HaTor, the original book we were talking about, talks about seven tikkunim we need to do also. And one of those tikkunim, the third one, is Hitklalut, he says. Hitklalut, he explains, it's undoing selfishness and connecting yourself to Klal Yisrael. And this is exactly, of course, what the Graz students did. They uprooted themselves from Europe. They gave up their stature. You have to understand, the Graz students were the top of the top. They were the greatest Talmidei Chachamim. They had great futures ahead of them, but they gave up their stature. They gave up their parnasa. They're being supported in Kolel. They gave up their security. And we forget this sometimes. Knowingly, they gave up their Torah. Knowing that they were moving to Eretz Yisrael, they knew that they were not going to be able to learn Torah the way they had learned in Europe. But it was worth it all for them to live in Eretz Yisrael. Many of the original 511 students of the Gra who came to Eretz Yisrael died horribly, and before they died horribly, they lived horribly. But they never ever gave up on the idea of Gula. They never said, we're going to go back. And they continued with their Emunah, they continued with their faith. Their Rav had taught them that Eretz Yisrael is Niknabas Yisroelim, that Eretz Yisrael is bought with troubles and tribulations. And even so, with everything they went through, these 511 original students managed to bring more and more and more Jews to settle the land. There's a sefer Maaseh Rokeach by Rav Elazar Rokeach, who is the Av Beit Din of Amsterdam, 1665 to 1742. The Maaseh Rokeach is a Kabbalistic commentary on Torah and Mishnah, and he speaks very interesting. He says that the number that a pasuk has in the Torah has special meaning. For example, he brings this pasuk in Bereishit. Second. In Bereishit, in Perek Tetvav, Pasuk Tetvav, he says, V'tatavo el avotecha b'shalom, you'll come to your fathers in peace, tekaveh b'sivah tovah, and you'll be buried in a good old age. He says that happens to be the 376th pasuk in the Torah from the beginning. Does anyone know what 376 might be in Gematria? Shalom, he says. And this is the first place we see the word Shalom mentioned in the Torah. He says it's very, very important in the Torah. Each pasuk corresponds, has some correspondence to what number it is. And if you happen to open up to the 5,700th pasuk in the Torah, which would be 1940, which is Dvarim Kaf Tet Kaf Vav. One second. Kaf Tet Kaf Vav. So it talks about all the bad things that the Jews done, and we get to Kaf Vav, and it says, Vecha Af Hashem Ba'aretz, that Hashem's anger will burn in the land. He's going to bring all the curse to it, which is written in this book. So the Pasuk 5,700, which would correspond to the year 1940, says that Hashem will be very upset and will bring all the horrible curses to the land. The Grat...
570.
I'm not up to that yet. The Grat said that before the Geula, there's going to be a terrible, terrible Chorban. And he mentions, the Gra talks about this, again, getting back to Sefer Ovadia. Please tell me, where is Sefer Ovadia? Here we are. And Sefer Ovadia, so it says, one second. We'll start with Tetvav, even though it's not the pasuk he brings. One second, he brings Yud Zion. Kikarov Yom Hashem al kol ha-goyim, because the day of Hashem is close among all the nations. Kasher sita yaseh lach gemulcha yeshuv b'roshecha. Whatever good you've done will be done back to you. Kikasher shetita mal har kodshi, the way you have drunk from the mountain of my holiness, yishtu kol ha-goyim, the goyim tamid, the nations will drink always. V'shetu v'lau v'ayu kalu hayu, and it will be as if all the other things never were. And then Yud Zion, this is the pasuk that the Gon mentioned. Uvahar Tzion tie pleita, on the mountain of Zion there will be a refuge, or it translates it here as deliverance. Vaya kodesh, and there will be holiness. V'yeshu Beit Yaakov et Moshem, and that Beit Yaakov will inherit their inheritance, whatever their belongings are, whatever are the things that belong to Beit Yaakov, on that day they're going to inherit it. Towards the end of his life, the Chafetz Chaim called Rav Yosef Shlomo Kahneman, and he spoke to him for many, many hours privately. They had a secret meeting. It was unusual for the Chafetz Chaim to spend so many hours in a meeting, even with such a great Talmid Chacham. And to this day, that entire meeting shrouded in mystery. The only thing that was ever publicized from that meeting, that again lasted hours, the only thing that was publicized was that the Chafetz Chaim said that gloomy black clouds are approaching Europe. And Rav Kahneman asked, well, what's going to be? If there's gloomy black clouds coming, what are going to happen? And the Chafetz Chaim, his answer was quoting the Suk, Behar Tzion Tieh Pleita, in the mountain of Zion there will be refuge, Vaya Kodesh, and there will be holiness. And he continued with the rest of with a continuation of Vadia, Vaya Notar B'Tzion, there will be something left in Zion, Vanishah B'Yushalayim, something in Jerusalem, Kodesh Yomalo. And it seems to be that this was actually Chafetz Chaim's way of saying that the Holocaust would never make it to Eretz Yisrael. That's how this was interpreted, understood. Rav Kahneman, who was the Rosh Yeshiva of Panovich, he quoted the Chafetz Chaim, who quoted this pasuk, which was originally, if you remember, originally it came from the Gra. The Gra actually spoke about this pasuk. And Rav Kahneman used this pasuk when he explained the unexplainable miracle of Rommel's sudden stop in El Amin. Why? Rommel was just on his way, continuing. It looked like he was going to get there to Israel, and he just suddenly stopped. And the Rav Kahneman quoted this pasuk in explaining this miracle of him stopping. And he also chose, if you happen to be in the Panovitcher Yeshiva, this pasuk is actually written on the face of the yeshiva. The whole idea, this concept was so important to him that this was the pasuk that they chose to put on the face of the yeshiva. In the Yerushalmi Gemara in Shvi'it, it says, Avotechem afal pi shenegalu chazu v'itabdu. Your ancestors, even though they were redeemed, they went back and became servants again. Avalatem meshatem negalim, but all of you, once you were redeemed, shuv einchem mishtabdim. You will never again be enslaved. And it's, some people feel that this is the proof of what it says in Sefer Dvarim, in Lamed, Perek Lam Psukei, V'vicha Hashem Elokecha L'Eretz Asher Yishu Avotecha, that Hashem will bring you to the land which your ancestors inherited, V'shta, and you will inherit it, V'tivcha V'bicha V'metecha, and Hashem will give you and increase you from your ancestors. And what pasuk is that, Shlomo Renner? What pasuk number? If I start counting number one?
Talking about another one.
Oh, sorry. That's pasuk 5708. That's the pasuk that's equivalent to 1948. That was the year we merited to create the law of Shivat Zion, a state of Shivat Zion. As it says in Psachim, Gadol Yom Kibbutz Galiot, that the day that the Jews will be brought back to Israel is so great, Shenivru Bo Shemai Marat, it's as great as the day that the world was actually created. So it seems to be, and very interestingly, that the idea of Yom Ha'atzmaut and Yom Yerushalayim, that the miracles that happened, which we somehow decided to recognize on the 20th and the 43rd day of the Sfira, that they actually have a base in Torah, they have a base in Kabbalah, they have a base in our history, and they're very, very important days for us, and we should certainly not take them lightly and give them the respect, the halachic and historical respect that they deserve. Thank you very much, everybody, for coming. Thank you for allowing me to speak.